Macintosh Folklore Radio, written by Andy Hertzfeld and Company, and read by Derek Warren. Things are better than ever, September 1984. My leave of absence drew to a close in August 1984, though I still hadn't decided whether I would return to Apple. I continued to feel very close to the company. It wouldn't be easy for me to turn in my badge, but I didn't see a reasonable alternative. I was sure that I would continue to write Macintosh software. The Mac was still brand new and overflowing with exciting opportunities for innovative applications. I was confident that I could earn more money working independently than Apple was willing to pay me, even if you counted the appreciation of stock options. But financial matters were not my paramount consideration. The main issue was that I wanted to continue to make a difference in the Macintosh's evolution. I felt that no matter what I did on my own, it could only have a small fraction of the impact that it would otherwise have had if I continued to work for Apple. Even though things had gone relatively well so far, the Macintosh's long-term success was far from certain, entirely dependent on the moves that Apple made to evolve the platform. Many of my closest friends were still part of the Macintosh team, so I heard a great deal about what was going on at Apple. I usually drove to Cupertino to visit every week or two, hanging out in the Bandley 3 fishbowl. I lived just next door to Macintosh hardware designer Burl Smith in separate houses on the same lot near downtown Palo Alto. I heard about Burl's trials and tribulations at work on a daily basis, and the news wasn't very encouraging. The Mac team merged with the Lisa team in February 1984, a few weeks before I started my leave. At the time, Steve Jobs claimed the merger would help transform the rest of Apple to be more like the Mac team. But to me, it seemed like the opposite had occurred. The idealistic version of the Macintosh team that I yearned for had apparently vanished, subsumed by a large organization of the type that we used to make fun of, riven with bureaucratic obstacles and petty turf wars. The core software group was still recovering from the intense effort to ship, suffering from a classic case of massive postpartum depression. Little had been accomplished over the spring and summer. The LaserWriter printer was the current focus of development, along with the AppleTalk network required to support it. The software team didn't have much to do with either of these projects. No one had set a compelling new goal for the team, and now they were just drifting. Burl Smith had completed the LaserWriter digital board and moved to working on the Turbo Macintosh, a new Mac digital board featuring a custom chip that supported 4-bit per pixel grayscale graphics and a fast DMA channel to interface an internal hard drive. Burl frequently complained of sparring with engineering manager Bob Belleville and others on his staff over trivial design decisions. He thought Bob didn't really want to add a hard drive to the Mac, favoring the development of a Xerox-style file server instead, and was therefore surreptitiously trying to kill the Turbo project. I didn't think that Burl would put up with this much longer. As he phrased it, he was asymptotically approaching liberation from Apple. The saving grace was that Bud Tribble finally completed his 6-year MD-PhD program at the University of Washington. Bud decided to forego practicing medicine in favor of returning to his old job at Apple as Macintosh software manager working for Bob Belleville. In July 1984, he moved into a spare bedroom at Burl's house in Palo Alto, so I got to see him frequently. I still had the highest respect for Bud and loved to show him whatever I was working on because he always had an insightful suggestion or two. I had mixed feelings about returning to the lumbering Macintosh division. Bud was a strong link to the good old days. Perhaps we could establish a little outpost in the large organization where the original Macintosh values could prevail. That might not have been possible if Bud worked for Bob Belleville, my nemesis, whom I blamed for many of the problems. The only solution I could think of was for Bud to work directly for Steve Jobs instead of working for Bob. Bud was all for it, but only Steve could make it happen. I called Steve's secretary, Pat Sharp, and arranged to have dinner with Steve and Bud to discuss my possible return to Apple. We met in the lobby of Bandley 3 and walked to an Italian restaurant on De Anza Boulevard a few blocks away. Steve seemed a bit preoccupied. I had to implicitly criticize Steve to make my case, and I was nervous about how he would react. After we ordered dinner, I cleared my throat and tentatively plunged ahead. As you know, I care a lot about Apple, and I really want to return for my leave of absence. I would love to work for Bud again, but things seem really messed up right now. I paused for a moment as I gathered my resolve. The software team is completely demoralized and has hardly done a thing for months, and Burl is so frustrated that he won't last to the end of the year. Steve cut me off abruptly with a withering stare. "You don't know what you're talking about," he interrupted, seeming more amused than angry. "Things are better than ever. The Macintosh team is doing great, and I'm having the best time of my life right now. You're just completely out of touch." I couldn't believe what I was hearing, and I couldn't tell if Steve was serious or not. I looked to Bud, who communicated his bewilderment with an apologetic shrug of his shoulders. I could see that he wasn't going to corroborate my views. "If you really believe that, I don't think there's any way that I can come back," I replied, my hopes for returning sinking fast. "The Mac team that I want to come back to doesn't even exist anymore." "The Mac team had to grow up, and so do you," Steve shot back. "I want you to come back, but if you don't want to, that's up to you. You don't matter as much as you think you do anyway." I saw that we were so far apart that there was little point in continuing the conversation. We quickly finished dinner and walked back to Apple without further discussion. Quitting was actually easier than I thought it would be. I just called up Apple's human resources department and let them know that I wouldn't be coming back. I didn't even have to sign any paperwork or turn in my badge, which I still have today, almost 20 years later. I thought it would feel devastating to resign, but I actually felt relieved and optimistic about writing Macintosh software on my own.